You're listening to the Broadway Podcast Network.
Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
While you were skipping stones, building forts, and flying kites, I was missing school and all my Saturday nights. Other kids were climbing trees and rolling down hills. I was singing songs to pay my family's bills. Little me, growing up Broadway. Little me.
Hello, welcome back to Little Me Growing Up Broadway with Mark Tumanelli. My guest today started her career on Broadway at the age of 9 in the original production of Evita, quickly followed by her landing the title role in the Broadway musical Annie at the age of 10. She was the longest running and youngest star of the Broadway musical at that time, playing the role for over 1,000 performances over nearly 3 years. Following her history-making run in Annie, she was cast on Kate and Ally, playing the role of Jenny Lowell on CBS for 6 seasons. She recurred on all 7 seasons of NBC's The West Wing. Other TV credits include The Closer, Buddy Farrow, Spy Game, Will and Grace, American Dad, Family Guy, CSI, Numbers, Cold Case, and many, many others. Her theater work includes starring in the LA premiere of Oleana, QED opposite Alan Alda at the Mark Taper Forum, and in the musical The Education of Randy Newman. Please welcome Allison Smith. Hi, Allison. Good morning.
Good morning.
How's it going?
Good to see you and hear you.
You too. We have to give a big shout out to my buddy Seth Rudetsky, who helped me get to you. I've been a big fan of yours for legitimately my whole life. And so it's really a dream to get to chat with you and hear your Broadway story.
That's so sweet. What a genius podcast.
Oh, well, thank you. Oh my God, I'm putting that on a t-shirt. Okay, so in 1979, you made your Broadway, was it 79 or 80, you made your Broadway debut in Evita?
It was late 79. It was November 79.
All right, yeah. So the show had just opened, and then were you like the first replacement in that show?
Yeah, well, I don't really know. I don't really know because I was 9.
Okay.
So those adult questions and answers were beyond me at the point. But oddly enough, Sarah Jessica Parker had a sister in Evita, a younger sister, and they were replacing another girl. And I didn't know Sarah and her family at the time. I'm not sure why I even mentioned that, except that it was a Broadway family. And so there was a woman in my small town who was my art teacher who had heard me sing at school, and her husband was a stagehand. And she said to my mom, "Joe, can I take her in? They're having replacements for one of the children in the children's chorus," and the rest is history. I went in and I got it.
Now, you're from New Jersey?
Yes, I'm from Bergen County, New Jersey.
Well, thank God for that little choir teacher that recognized that you had a sensational talent and it was time to get you to Evita.
It was time to think bigger things than the small town, yeah.
So now Evita was like a very hot show. You joined the cast. It had only been open for a couple months. And so you did that show, I'm assuming, with Patti LuPone for that first chunk of time.
Yeah, with Patty.
With Patty. What do you remember about that experience?
Oh, I remember just the magic of being in a real theater for the first time, and the kind of circus of it all, the magic of the chorus men and women and kind of naked ladies and men running around and changing, which, you know, I grew up in a pretty, you know, my mother was raised pretty strict Catholic. So my brothers, you know, were not I mean, they did, but she didn't want them to walk around even with their shirts off. So suddenly watching my mom witness all of that circus and that joy of just the freedom of people doing what they love to do and acting and singing and dancing and wigs and costumes. I think that really, that behind the stage stuff really impacted me and enthralled me more than I even knew what was going on stage, because I couldn't watch the show because I was backstage. But hearing Patty and Mandy through the mic, through the speakers, was just riveting. And to wait for your cue and to go down the stairs when it was your time and all of that.
Getting to do Evita for whatever chunk of time, I'm sure, was this wildly exciting experience, and especially, you know, this hot show with Patti LuPone. And was there very little interaction between you and her, I would imagine?
There was very little interaction, but whatever interaction there was just gracious and amazing. And she was just lovely to all of the kids and their parents. And, you know, she was just such a force and working so hard. Everyone on that show was just so, so gracious and welcoming. Of course, I was only there for about 2 months, so I can't say.
And then did Annie come calling right away? Was that the next thing?
Yes, I think that the open call to replace Sarah Jessica came within weeks of me starting Evita.
Did your mom have your, like, have her sights set on it? Did it be like, well, this is a kid role and you have this killer voice. Were you a redhead then?
I've always been a strawberry blonde-ish, okay, reddish headed kid. So my mom was not anything show busy. I'm the youngest of six kids, and she was an older mom because she had many kids before me. So she was not pushing anything in the theater world for me. She was a bit frazzled by it all and thrown into this world very late in life for her. And so, no, I think it was my dream from the time I was seven to be Annie on Broadway, because I listened to that record over and over and over and sang it and performed it in school and would tell people that I was going to be Annie on Broadway. But again, that wasn't anything that any other girl or boy my age wasn't doing at that time. So it didn't seem particularly interesting that Allison Smith was doing that, because everybody wanted to be Annie on Broadway.
Everyone wanted to be Annie. So what do you remember about going to the open call for this, you know, search for the Annie? Now, this show had been running for a couple of years, was a very, very big hit. And so I'm sure there was like a billion kids there.
There were a million kids there. It was cold. It was December. Long lines outside the theater where you had to wait. And what I remember mostly about the first one was you got measured for your height pretty immediately. And if you were over, I think it was,
Yeah. 4'10" used to be like the thing. Everyone had to be like 4'10" or under.
I think, and I was very small. But I remember just that, taking off your shoes and being measured and then sort of herded into a different group to sing Happy Birthday.
Okay. And then do you remember feeling like, oh, they're watching me? Was there a moment where you're like, I think that I'm going to be Annie? Like, when did that start to happen?
That probably didn't really happen until the very last time they had me sing. As far as the nerves, I think I had a sort of natural born confidence and probably delusion to thinking that, oh yeah, this is mine. This is just, you know, my calling and I've got this. And nerves didn't really come in until the seventh call back and the very, very final moment where I had to sing. Up until then, it was all naive ignorance of just, you know, this star-crossed feeling that it was going to be me.
So what was your family doing when they were like, this kid's going to probably be Annie? Like, she keeps getting called back.
I think there was great excitement. I know there was great excitement. You know, I come from a very blue collar, not an easy life family. You know, we never had very much money. My dad worked 3 jobs his whole life, which meant that my mom was dealing with a lot of kids on her own a lot. So it was kind of a stressful household, to be honest. And, although I will say I always, being the youngest, was loved and adored by my older siblings and always encouraged and always kind of, they made me feel like I was a light in the woods to them, because I was a little bit weird, meaning weird to them, meaning I was very willing to sing on the fire hydrant on our street and put on weird scarves and, you know, be an entertainer always. And I think they got a kick out of me. So I think they were just like, okay, she's always been a little bit of a circus kid. This is really fun and exciting. And this might actually just happen.
This is her destiny. Okay. So tell me about the day you found out that you were going to be Broadway's third Annie. Oh, your fourth Annie, right?
I am yes. The fourth.
Okay.
It was getting pretty nitty gritty with a lot of eliminations, and I had to go do a vita. Sometimes I'd have to leave the audition process early, earlier than others. And we were always worried they would just eliminate me because of that, because it was an inconvenience. I wasn't able to stay. I wasn't able to do the next round if it was past, you know, 7 p.m. And so they would just tell me to come back the next time. And so there were 5 of us in the end. And the very last thing that happened was they had me come out on my own and sing Maybe.
And that was on stage at the Alvin Theater, right?
Wow. Yeah, on stage at the Alvin, the final test. I don't think Martin was, there's a primetime Saturday video of the whole open call process. It's a fabulous, it's all kind of recorded history for me to be able to see. And so it's actually easier to tap into the feelings and memories, like when you watch a video.
Because there's a video of it. Did Martin, who told you, who got like came on stage and said, you're our next Annie?
They called after. Okay. I went across the street to a diner called Thanos, which was on 52nd and 8th Avenue.
On the corner, yeah.
Yeah, and I was and played like, you know, Pac-Man because I was waiting to do the night show of Evita. And my mom called home from the payphone. And one of my brothers said, they called and said, she got it.
That is a huge moment. I'm sure that is hard to forget that.
It was really wonderful.
Now, you were the smallest and youngest girl to play that role on Broadway. They had been, you know, Andrea and then Shelley and then Sarah, Jessica. And, you know, they were like all 12, 13-ish and taller. And mm-hmm. So you were the first sort of little and young Annie on Broadway, which kind of changed the dynamic of what that show felt like. Mm-hmm. And I think, and then historically since then, Annie's always been a lot younger. You were the first little Annie. Was there any sort of pressure about that? Or did you feel like they were giving this role to a 10-year-old and you had to show up in a bigger way? Was there any of that was part of your thought process?
I think that Martin was nervous. It was a risk for him and he really needed me to come through. And he was, I guess he was notoriously scary to all of the orphans and all the girls. They all talk about that. I don't know if you've interviewed anyone.
Yes, I have.
You know, he was very, you know, this ominous presence with his fur coats and his hair. He was like Wolfman Jack entered the building. He had this very strong, fabulous cologne. So even if you could sense
that. Even if you didn't see him, you could smell him.
Yes. And so, but, you know, over the years, the feeling, there are adults who confirmed for me that, yes, he had a lot riding on my success and a lot riding on me being able to do it. So he was a little bit hard on me. And rightly so. And he needed me to be able to do it all within, I think it was 10 days or 2 weeks of rehearsal. And for half of that, I was still doing a Vita. So he had every right to need to make sure that I was going to rise to the occasion. And so he wasn't certainly, I wouldn't even say nearly unkind or far from abusive in any way. He just was intent on making sure that I knew what was riding on really getting it and doing it. And if that meant doing it over, if that meant really, really saying, you gotta get this down. So I think there were some occasions where it was rattling, but there was so little time to think and so much there was so much learning to do.
And I'm sure you wanted to be great. So you were doing everything you could to deliver.
Of course.
Yes.
And I love the role so much. And I have to say, I had seen Sarah do it in 1978. My brother had gotten me tickets for Easter, and I went and saw the show, and she was such a phenomenal actress that I'm sure in the beginning I was just maybe mimicking some of what she had done because she was such a beautiful Annie. And then I think naturally I was such a ragamuffin, and she was so poised even as Annie, you know. Mm-hmm. And I just think my natural attributes and kind of unpoised ways fit being Annie so naturally that I think that added to my performance in ways without me really trying.
Was there anything that Sarah Jessica, there's like a very famous photo of her like handing it over to you. Is there anything that you remember her telling you about, this is what you need to worry about, or this is the thing that's the hardest? Do you remember any of that?
I have a photo of a note. Well, I have the note and of a note that she left me backstage. It was very sweet, but it was very like, you know, jiggle the handle to get the light to work. You know, it's very, very kind of theater kid to theater kid, like, you know, this is your room now, as opposed to anything about the role.
How did the other kids sort of welcome you? I mean, I've heard crazy stories about those orphans and how that sort of blew up, and parents and kids and all of that. How did they welcome this little girl coming in to kind of carry their show? I mean, essentially, I mean, if Annie's not good, the show's not good.
Yeah, we had I think there was a really big changeover when I came in. I think a lot of people were fired or let go. And I don't really know the history behind that, but when they were rehearsing me, they were rehearsing a lot of new people. So along with me came four or five new orphans. And so we were all, I think only Janine Babo stayed as Molly, and the Tessie stayed, and the Duffy stayed, and then we were a new.
Oh, so that probably made the transition a lot easier for everyone.
Yeah, we were all new families, all new parents. None of them were like the professionals who had been on tour or had been in it for many years. So we were all this kind of fresh blood and experiencing it all with joy for the first time together.
What do you remember about those first couple performances, like doing it?
I remember specifically on opening night, getting nerves before I sang maybe for the first time. And I remember sitting on the floor with Molly on my lap, and they vamp before you come in, you know, the bump,
dun, 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 dun.
And I did not come in after the second, and I got hit with such stage fright it wasn't just nerves. It was, I actually don't think I'm going to sing.
Oh my God.
I actually don't think I can do this. And I just looked down to the conductor, and he nodded. He gave one such reassuring nod of the head. And that was it. I never looked back.
And then you stayed in the show for longer than any girl had done it, doing 1,000 performances.
Yeah.
Did you move theaters 3 times while you did the show?
Maybe four.
I think it's four.
Two intermittent. I think there was like the St. James and the Anta, maybe?
Yeah, no, you moved to the Anta, which was now the August Wilson, which is right across the street. Then they went to the Eugene O'Neill for like literally 3 months. And then the Eurus, which is now the Gershwin, which is where that show closed. But it's sort of crazy. Annie was homeless for like a few months and they just kept moving it. I imagine is a very kind of exciting, like, or strange experience.
It was exciting to eventually land at the Eurus because the Eurus, which now the Gershwin, massive. I mean, it's massive. It's much more like a concert hall than a theater. So it felt when we came from these very, you know, early 1900 theaters that felt, I think it holds 1500 or something. Yeah.
I think they're actually like at 1700. It's I think the second largest theater on Broadway. It's really huge. So was there a thought like I'm staying in this forever because I'm tiny? Did you feel like, I mean, obviously everyone was very obsessed with your performance. It was very well reviewed and everybody really gathered around this little girl playing Annie and you became like the thing to see. So I'm sure producers wanted to keep you a long time, but was there a moment where you're like, I never want to leave this job? Like, tell me what was going on and at performance 400 and 500 and 600.
I definitely never wanted to leave that job. For the first 2 years, it was absolute bliss. And it was a metamorphosis for me as what I can see now as an artist, because interestingly enough, I worked for 20, 25, 30 years before I had the adult awakening of like, oh, I'm an artist, you know, because in a sense it was more about the job itself. Right. Because I wanted to be Annie and then all the other things happened so quickly after. But in looking back, it was a real blossoming of my art, of becoming a character, knowing a character so well, and really living and breathing through the story. And eventually, as I matured into being her for so long, as people do who get to play characters for so long, there are different depths and things you find, and also different cast members come and go, which change the dynamics of the relationships of the characters. And so I would say it was a solid 2 years before I even looked back, because I was so into the art of it. My voice was getting stronger and stronger, and there was real power in that, especially once we got to the Eurus. I mean, the height of doing that show 8 days a week, probably 2 years in, my voice was incredibly strong and I was able to do a lot with it. And so there was so much joy in exploring the character through song and through the words themselves, and having scenes with, as I said, different people.
Who stands out as someone who's come into the show, or someone that you got to work with that was, you know, the highlight for you?
Well, I entered with John Shuck and Alice Ghostly.
Wow.
And that was like coming in with the, what do they say? The old guard, you know, when I step into them and they just shower me with their talent. And then as new people came in, they were kind of working off me, and Harv Presnell came in, and Harv was just hilarious and a delight and had the most beautiful tenor voice.
Yeah.
And he would throw me so high in the air. That relationship became very physical because he was so big and I was so small. And so there was a lot of, you know, when he came in, there was a lot of comedy that was able to be entered, instead of, with John, who was a little bit more fatherly and, our size wasn't as different. So I would say Harv and Marcia Lewis were my, I would say my main Daddy Warbucks and Miss Hannigan. And they were just joyous and talented and great at Daddy Warbucks and Miss Hannigan. And there was just a lot of love and emotion, I think, that came through our characters with one another and comedy, really. Just, we really were kind of, could get pretty slapsticky up there.
Now, when you're playing America's Favorite Orphan, you get to do a lot of like press things or events. Obviously, there's that very cool Martin Sharnan live from DC, where you sing Hard Knock Life, and then Sarah Jessica sings Maybe, and then Shelley sings Maybe, and then Andrew sings Tomorrow or whatever. What are those things that you remember the most out of doing all those cool kind of press things? And then we'll talk about the not so fun events that Annie has to do.
Well, I always remember when I was with Andrea and Shelley and Sarah, because I just was always so nervous. They were older than me. They were, you know, they had all the, I was just this scrawny little kind of scrappy kid, and they wore pretty dresses and their hair was done.
And they were like teenagers, you know, yeah.
Andrea was always in a cool jumper, and they had
smoking a cigarette in a jumper. There we go.
They had breasts, and I was always just so awkward, and they were always lovely and kind to me. But I think the age difference, especially in those teen years, definitely separated us from me feeling a little bit like an outsider, but they were always lovely and complimentary. I just, you know, 15, 16, 17 year olds don't necessarily want to hang out with like an
11 year old. Yeah. You did this really cool thing that is on YouTube. It's like Doug Henning. It must be like Circus of the Stars or something, where Andrea goes into a tube singing Tomorrow and you come out finishing Tomorrow.
Yeah. It was actually a Doug Henning magic TV special, yeah.
Oh my God. Were there other things that stand out to you as being weird, fun, Annie promo things you got to do?
And we're still in the good category.
We're still in the good. We're going to the bad in 5 seconds, everyone. Stand by.
You know, the Macy's Thanksgiving Day Parade was always a big deal. You know, it was Thanksgiving morning. My mother's cooking for the whole family, trying to get turkey on the table, and yet, you know, having to get me in the city by some ungodly hour to
4 a.m. to be at Macy's. Yes.
It was funny. One of my brothers was a police officer in the town I grew up in, and I, you know, was working all those years. And I remember on Thanksgiving Day, it was like, I would go do the Macy's Thanksgiving parade. He would go do, you know, his shift. And then I'd come in with my hair in pins from having worn the wig, and he'd come in his police uniform, and we'd sit down and finally have things. Everybody was waiting for us to get back to eat.
That's a sitcom. Can we write, you need to write that for yourself.
I actually did write it.
Okay. Okay. Great. Good. Well, I'm going to try to make it happen. Let's talk about some of the stuff that wasn't great. You mentioned on a 2020 interview that, you know, you were getting lots of requests to do very big things for a lot of money, and your mom would say yes to it because how do you turn down, you know, $15,000 or $20,000 to sing at a party? Yeah. So tell me about some of those things that were less exciting, that, you know, the dark side of fabulous, as we might call it.
Yeah. I mean, I would never use the word dark relating to anything. I would just say that, you know, we were talking about how long did you want to stay? When did you want to go? I would say before I left, I think it came up in my head. I think maybe we were down to like kind of 6 month check-ins. Like, do you want to stay another 6 months? Do you want to stay another 6 months? And I think maybe 6 months before I actually left was the first time I considered it. And that was purely because of my age, being an eighth grader and adolescence, and was I growing out of, you know, wanting to be known as Annie before. But I think the hardest thing for me was when I was 12 and being hired to sing for events that were for other kids my age. To be the entertainer. It was a little scarring, I have to say. And I wouldn't call it dark. I would just say for a adolescence level of never wanting to feel different or never wanting to feel humiliated, that that felt a little humiliating. I remember two instances. One was someone's bat mitzvah that I was hired to sing at. So, you know, I would have to wear Annie garb. And everybody was all jazzed out in there. Bat mitzvah stuff. And I was,
and you're with your age, they're like a year older than you.
And okay, I just wanted to sit with them and be able to like do the banana split, bar and make myself a sundae. But I had to perform for them. So that was hard. And like a performing arts camp, I think same, I was in the entertainment and I'd never been able to go to sleepaway camp. And I was like, I want to kind of spend the night here and jump in the lake. So I would say that around when I was around 12, those were the things that were starting to become a little bit more of an internal conflict for me. But never, and the reason I left when I left was literally because I was starting a new school year and it was like, this will just go on forever. Why not just go and make a clean break, you know, in September when school's starting again.
Hey guys, it is Ryan. I'm not sure if you know this about me, but I'm a bit of a fun fanatic when I can. I like to work, but I like fun too. It's a thing. And now the truth is out there. I can tell you about my favorite place to have fun. Chumba Casino. They have hundreds of social casino style games to choose from with new games released each week. You can play for free anytime, anywhere. And each day brings a new chance to collect daily bonuses. So join me in the fun. Sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Step into the world of power, loyalty, and luck.
I'm going to make him an offer he can't refuse.
With family, cannolis, and spins mean everything.
Now, you want to get mixed up in the family business.
Introducing The Godfather at ChumbaCasino.com. Test your luck in the shadowy world of the Godfather slot.
Someday, I will call upon you to do a service for me.
Play the Godfather, now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Welcome to the family.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
So that was like how you made that decision.
Yeah.
How did production sort of, were they okay with it? Did they try to get you to stay? Do you remember any of that?
I think, I don't really, because I think my mom sort of dealt with, for lack of a better word, the business side of that. But I think everybody probably agreed if I was going to go, why not start
your school year?
I guess that would have been eighth grade. Why not start when this new school year is starting? I think if everybody knew it was going to close 3 months later, they would have asked me to stay. I think in September they realized
that the show would wrap by January.
Yeah, and I would, in hindsight, it would have been great if I could have
closed
finished.
It out.
But going at any time would have been as hard as it was. So it was pretty devastating to go.
Yeah, and kind of transitioning back to real life is really hard after having that level of success and that much to do. I mean, just to have that kind of schedule for year after year where you're doing 8 shows a week and you are doing this much school and going, like that schedule gets so, you get so used to it, especially as a kid.
Sorry.
No, go ahead.
Well, I was just going to say it's been interesting as a parent. You know, I have two daughters and one of them is already 18. And so throughout many years of her high school years, I would not have an answer to like some things or her middle school year. You know, if they were watching TV, I'd be like, I don't remember ever wanting to watch this much. And I was like, yeah, I would literally was the entertainment. I was never
one entertained you.
Yes. Yeah. I was never really consuming entertainment. I realized, because by 8 o'clock every night I was the entertainment. So
are either of your kids interested? Are either of them performers?
They are not really performers. I mean, the younger one is certainly more of a performer and we'll see. She's still, only 14, but they are not like straight out of the womb, you know, ready to sing and dance and take it on. I will say not because either of them couldn't. And my older one has been involved with stage managing and being in on the technical side throughout high school and stuff. But I think that as a parent, you see who your children are, and I think they have other gifts to give to the world that are more who they are.
Yeah.
But you know, we all love theater.
We all love the theater. Now, Allison Kirk replaced you, and I'm sure it was hard to hand over the role to her. Was there anything that you said to her, like, jiggle this, or, you know, this is how you turn the light on? Or were you like, I got to get out of here. I can't handle this emotional, you know, changeover?
Well, I don't know if you know this, but Allison Kirk is from the same town that I'm from.
I did not know that.
And we were in high school together.
Stop this.
I mean, we were in the same, and she was Kate. She was an orphan.
So you kind of knew her going.
I think it was my understudy as well. So she had actually gone on a handful of times. So I think that we had already known each other very well to that point. And I probably was not as gracious as I should have been because it was really painful for me to see somebody else do the role.
Yeah.
Even though it was my choice. But we had already been backstage because she was playing Kate. So something was in the water in Bergen County because there was another little girl, Martha Byrne, who was also from Waldwick, New Jersey, who played July. So it's very odd.
Well, move there if you want to be in the next revival of Annie. All right. So tell me about life after Annie. What kind of things were happening when you went back to that eighth grade year? And were you auditioning for things? And how did Kate and Allie kind of come to you?
I was working in New York. You know, I'm sure I was still doing commercials. It was definitely, I do remember definitely come 6 o'clock every night, not really knowing what to do with myself and kind of boring, you know, life actually really did seem kind of boring. Just like, oh, what do people do? What do we do? Just sit here and
talk to each other and watch television? No, thank you.
And so, the Kate and Allie audition came up and I was definitely still working and auditioning in New York for things, but I never really had gone in for a TV series before because they all shot in California. Yeah. So this was a real anomaly that there was a sitcom with kids that would be shooting in New York. And so that was really the only reason why I was even on that audition, because moving to California would never have been an option for my family. And I do remember that audition process being put on tape, playing different. First, I read Jenny's part, then I would read Emma's part, and they would kind of mix and match. And I think actually I was cast as Emma and Ari Myers was cast as Jenny. Then we got in the room with Jane Curtin and Susan St. James. I might be jumping too far ahead, but
no, never. This is magic.
They looked at us in the room and our coloring and they were like, wait, you switch over there. Come over here. This is this family. So, anyway, that was the only reason why I was on that audition at all. It was really not usual for a TV show to be shot in New York City.
I was very wildly obsessed with the show, but specifically you. And I didn't even know at that point, because we didn't have the internet, that I was like, this girl was Annie. Like, I would have had no idea. But like, my little gay heart just was like very much in love with you. I thought you were the most beautiful person I'd ever seen on television. And
I'm telling
you the truth, I swear. And then you started singing on a bunch of episodes and I was like, I couldn't love her more. Like it was just magic. So tell me about, you know, now learning this sort of whole new world of doing a sitcom, which is theatrical in a way, but you know, it's a totally different medium.
Yeah. I will tell you, for 20 years I worked in a 4-block radius because Evita was on.
Was at the Broadway Theater.
Yeah. And yes, then I went to the Alvin, and then, eventually the Urus. And then the Ed Sullivan Theater was on 53rd and Broadway. And it was a real theater, cockroaches and all. And so we just rehearsed during the week like it was a play. It did not feel all that different. Obviously, the camera work was a bit different, but it felt very theater skilled, especially with the comedy of it. And so Bill Persky, I will say, who was the director and kind of our showrunner, mastermind of it all, was just the sweetest, jolliest, bubbliest, most fun dad slash grandpa that any of us kids doing that show could have had. And he really set the tone for us feeling like a family. And we did school in the basement, and then we'd like go out to lunch. And it was so real and normal and nothing like when I eventually moved to California and was eventually on one of the sound stages. I was like, wow, we were so New York. We were just, you know, you'd step out the door and you'd be in New York City with everything that came along with that. It just kept everything so down to earth and real. And I went to my own school every day I could, and I commuted back to Jersey every night. So it was just very, it was very homey. It was a real second home. And, for my dad had moved out and my parents separated when I was 11 during my run of Annie. So in many ways, it almost felt like my first home.
Wow.
Just for the stability of it.
Yeah. And I mean, most, you know, people book sitcoms and they go, they don't go, you know, you book a pilot, whatever. But, you know, this show had 122 episodes and you guys, it seemed like a really wonderful place to work based on every interview I've seen with, you know, Jane Curtin and all the kids and just sort of Susan St. James. Tell me about sort of what the family dynamic was between all these, you know, sort of two moms and all these kids. Did we mostly get along? Did we have, you know, periods of, I can't stand these people? How did that go for you?
We all get along. And Ari Myers, we were the exact same age. I think we're 6 months apart. We were sisters. We just were sisters. And it was whatever came across on the screen was probably exactly what was happening behind the scene. You know, she was this New York City kid who was cooler and more urban. And I was from a, you know, this big family in the suburbs. And I think those dynamics came across. And she was my very, very, we would work all day and then go home and talk on the phone until 2 a.m. We were just real teenage best friends moving through adolescence and life together. We never talked about work. We did what we did and then, you know, saw we had a break and would try to go roller skate down to 8th Avenue before, you know, we would miss our next scene. And Freddie Kohler, who played my brother, felt very much like our little brother, for better or worse for him, because he was, I think, 8 when we started. So
yeah,
we probably should have paid more attention to him. And
but that would have been outside the dynamic of what was happening on Kate and Ellie, which is like, yeah, this poor kid who had no bestie. It was like you two girls and then this boy running around, which was very charming. So obviously there are things that happen in sitcoms that, you know, like sometimes are like when you're a teenager, like, I don't want to do this. Did that come up ever where you're like, I don't want to film this kind of episode or I don't want this storyline? Do you remember anything like that coming up?
Mark, I feel like the fact that you were watching TV and somehow were drawn to me and loved me, that your words, not mine, is astonishing to me, because that period, the Kate and Ellie period for me felt, besides all the love around me and maybe not the first year or two, but the most awkward, I mean, physically awkward. I hated wearing all the preppy clothes because I wanted to look cool and feel pretty and be pretty. And I did not think of myself as pretty those years. And so that was really hard to wear clothes that made me feel kind of worse. Mm-hmm. I remember the poor wardrobe department, you know, but you don't rehearse 4 days or 4.5 days in your wardrobe, but come tape moment when I had to put on those clothes, I did not, the artist in me did not have that maturity to say, oh, I'm playing a character. It really felt like they were putting me in these really ugly preppy clothes and Ari got to look all cute. So that was a bit hard for me. And sometimes the singing was a bit hard for me just because it was a period of my life where I was trying to separate myself from Annie and be something different and just explore who I was without that following me a bit. Which makes sense when you're growing up. Of course, now I think, oh my gosh, it was the greatest thing that ever happened to you. How could you have ever felt that way? But I think that I probably would have been a little more stunted if I didn't have the kind of independent, rebellious personality to just want to kind of bite and chew my way into figuring out more of who I was, because I didn't want to just be known for that my whole life.
I think it's incredibly hard to be a teenager on a television show and growing up through those high school years, essentially on camera. Like, nobody feels good about themselves, no matter how gorgeous they are. And so I think that's tricky. You brought up the singing episodes, specifically the Goodbye to You episode, which I had recorded on VHS and watched so many times. But were you ever like, oh, I want to do this song? Or were they like, we want you to sing more? What do you remember about how that kind of came into it?
Bill Persky, and I don't know, did you see the set or watch the Seth?
Yeah, I did watch it. Yeah.
I mean, Bill from the get-go was like, I spoke to him at, 50 years old that I am. And he was like, we're going to get you to sing, kiddo, on that Seth's show.
Yeah.
Yeah. So he just, like all good dads or family members should, I just knew that I had that talent and thought it was a complete crime and waste to not utilize it. And he still thinks to this day, and he's right. I mean, he's right.
I mean, they let you sing like a 4-minute song on a sitcom, and that just like, just never happened.
That was all him. None of that was me. I wish I could say I had the maturity to just take ownership of all my talents all the time, but it was really him just being like, yeah, we got Annie and she can sing
and we're going to do it
every season.
Is a different level of celebrity because now you're on TV and you're in people's homes. Do you remember that shift of starting to get recognized and, being sort of out and about, and sort of how did your family deal with that? How did you deal with that?
Yeah, I remember, again, we had the luxury of being in New York City and no one really caring as much. You hit the streets just like everybody else. But when I would go back home to Bergen County and go to Paramus Park, the mall, and have teenage kids who didn't know me follow me around. And they're not kind. Teenagers aren't kind.
They're not known for being sweet.
She's so much prettier on TV, and they're just kind of, bullying you a bit. And luckily I always had my tried and true friends with me. So those things were hard, just the awkward teenage years. And then I think that there's a way in New York City or just people who are known in general where you can kind of walk the streets, certainly in New York, you can walk the world kind of showing yourself more. And I don't mean externally being showy. I just mean, or you can kind of go in your hide mode. And I remember being in New York and just being kind of, just being a woman, being street savvy those years in New York City anyway, or a young woman, just kind of how to just mix in with everybody else is basically what I did. But I did go to NYU while Kate and Allie was on. And I don't know. I think at that point I was just like, this is who I am. What are you going to do? I work all day. I go to school in the morning. I go to school at night. It was just after doing it for probably 10 or more years at that point, I was just who I was. Had a lot of years of work under my belt by that point,
And I'm sure after like 6 seasons of a sitcom that's a hit, it's really hard to close that chapter. What do you remember thinking of, like, what do I do next? How do I let the industry know that I'm here and I'm not just this this girl that you've watched grow up on television?
Yeah, well, what happened for me was when we finished Kate and Ellie, I would imagine it was in the spring, because we usually always finished around March or so and finished around spring. I finished out my sophomore year at NYU and got a job in Los Angeles that summer. And I'd only been to LA once or twice before for Silver Spoons in 1982, I believe, or one, and then maybe some Annie tour or something. And so I did some after school special in LA, and I got there and it was summer and I smelled honeysuckle and night blooming jasmine for the first time. I was 19 years old. So it really was a solid 10 years of working and commuting to work every day my whole life. And I saw other kids my age. First of all, it's Los Angeles, so everything is like sunnier and softer, yeah, and brighter. And I saw kids my own age kind of doing college age, hanging out and having parties and being social. And I got invited to a party in LA by Ricky Lake, who was an old theater friend from New York.
Yes.
He was living in LA at the time. There was kind of a New York crowd that had sort of moved to LA by that time. And I went to this party and I said, I don't think I'm going back. I don't think I'm going back. I called my mom and I said, yeah, I actually don't think I'm coming back. She was like, what? So that was a moment for me. I mean, California, I feel like I'm like Joni Mitchell talking about my Laurel Canyon days, but it really was that for me. It really was this shift of, I've had a really intense 10 years of my life and I've never stopped. And I think I'm going to just slow down a bit. I was still working. I got an agent there. I didn't know anything else. I didn't feel like, oh, you know what? I want to be a dentist. But there was definitely a reevaluation, which I think was the greatest, most important thing for me, was to just make sure I wanted to continue to do what I was doing, that I loved doing what I was doing, that I was good at what I was doing, that I wasn't, you know, I'd never been to a class, an acting class before.
Wow.
Which is crazy to think it was going backward. I didn't even study art or film or writing at NYU because I was so engrossed in doing it that I thought I should learn something else about the world. So I took, humanities and literature at NYU at Gallatin, kind of creating my own schedule. And so I went to acting classes and I rediscovered doing scenes and you know, theater pieces that I had never been exposed to, or studied Shakespeare and all these things on my own. I'd never re-enrolled in, I think I took some UCLA classes for a while and in different subjects like photography. And it was just a real explosion of freedom and independence from my mom, who had been, you know, my obvious guardian all those years and yeah, commuting with me. And so it was kind of the greatest thing that ever happened. It was the beginning of the next chapter for me.
And you kind of don't stop. I mean, you book guest star, ER, Providence, X-Files. And in 1999, you book this role on The West Wing that I'm sure was a game changer for you as far as, you know, being back on a major, major series that you're on, like, you know, often. Yeah. I'm sure that was very affirmative. Like, this is what I'm supposed to do.
Yeah. I mean, I had a really, really long, good run in television. I played, I did all the good guest spots.
You did all the shows.
I cried everywhere. And The West Wing, and I did theater, which was great in LA. Fully different experience, but made me feel like, I've always felt like I was a theater actor. So sustaining that and continuing that as much as I could there was important to me, and very satisfying. I mean, there was not an audition that I wanted more than the theater auditions I went on. And if I got them, it was more satisfying. And there were things that I didn't get too, and experiences that I had. One of my most famous in my mind things that I didn't get was the Bette Midler version of Gypsy, TV version of Gypsy, where it was between me and another girl, the girl who got it. I think it was Cynthia Gibb, to play
Louise. Yeah.
And I did a bunch of screen tests with Midler. And I also, all those kind of singing connection things, are the ones that stung that I didn't, because I was like, this is my history. I have a theater history. I have a Broadway musical history. So it was Gypsy, the TV version of Gypsy that I didn't get. It was Mr. Holland's Opus that I screen tested. There is a student in that who sings that I didn't get. I mean, now I'm just going to list all the things I didn't get. I don't know if you know this as well, but I got the original revival of Tommy that was going to Broadway when I was around this time, when I had first moved to LA. I got the role of Sally, and right when it was starting in La Jolla and then going to Broadway, and I turned it down to do a Friday the 13th movie.
Oh my God.
Because I was like, I've done Broadway before and I've never done a movie before. My mother was like, I think you're making a terrible mistake. It's a horror movie. I was like, yeah, but I've already
want to do it
before. So, clunky, clunky.
All right. Well, it all worked out. Look at you with nearly 100 IMDb credits. Like, you've killed it. You've been on everything. I love when I see you on my television, it makes me so happy. And I love that you're sort of, you're always coming up with things, and it's kind of incredible. And when you think back at that kid in 1979 in Evita, what do you think she would think of all of this? Like, that's wild to me.
Oh, I just feel so, I've really, I'm a writer as well, and I'm finishing a novel right now. And I think what's so interesting is how I'm just so lucky. It's all been so star-crossed and fortunate. And I've been on, in one of the greatest Broadway shows of all time, playing the role in it. Kate and Allie was this incredible 80s sitcom experience. The West Wing is certainly another incredible, you can't beat being
on
Sorkin, Sorkin TV show. And so I guess what I realized is that I was born an artist. I've always been an artist. I love to sing. I love to act. I love to write. I love comedy. I love drama. And I'm just, an empath, and I love stepping into expressing how other people feel, or feeling how other people feel, whether it's through singing or writing or performing. So I guess in hindsight, I think it's kind of a miracle that by 9 years old, I was already doing that. I think it's
now,
amazing.
Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, I mean, I think I'm just so, so blessed.
It's pretty incredible. Now, before we do quick fire questions, or before we wrap up, would you do another Broadway musical? Is that something you look at, you pursued, you go in for? What's happened? I need you on Broadway, Allison Smith.
I would love to be on Broadway. I would love to be on Broadway in a play or a musical. I just moved back to the New York area, so I have my eye set on that. I hold me to it. I think it's
okay. I think you need to play Cynthia and Dear Evan Hansen, which is
I thought that when I saw it.
Okay. So I'm sending it out to the universe.
Okay.
It's happening. All right. Are you ready for our quick fire questions?
I think so.
You're just going to go with your first thought. Don't overthink it. Okay. Your first audition song.
Something from The Sound of Music.
Great. First Broadway show you saw.
Annie.
Something you have turned down that you had second thoughts about, which we're going to say might be Tommy.
Yeah, Tommy on Broadway.
Okay, fill in the blank. Jane Curtin is?
Hilarious.
Artist you would like to work with that you haven't?
Brandi Carlile.
What revival of a musical would you like to star in?
Oh, well, I always wanted to play Maria, but I'm way too old now. Gypsy.
Great. Who do you talk to most from your Kate and Allie times?
Ari.
Go-to album for a car trip.
John Mayer, Paradise Alley. Paradise okay. Alley.
A musical that you used to listen to.
Sound of Music.
Have you ever watched footage of you playing Annie? Like in, I'm going to say in the last 5 years.
Yes.
Okay. It's up there. I mean, you got your most of your show on YouTube, which is amazing. all right. Who has been your favorite on-screen co-star?
I have to say I love Frank Whaley from Buddy Farrow. We had a blast.
All right. If they made a musical of Kate and Allie back in the day, who would Patti LuPone play?
If they made a musical of Kate and Allie?
Yes. And Patti LuPone has to be Kate or Allie. Who is she?
Oh, my gosh. I'm just leaning towards Susan because
I think that's the right choice.
Yeah. A little.
Can you name two Real Housewives?
Absolutely not. I've never watched it.
Ever. That means you're a classy lady and I like you. But I love the Housewives. All right. Who is your favorite Muppet?
I wasn't a Muppet person.
I can't get over this.
I'm so sorry. You know, I was working. I'm telling you, there are so many.
Like black holes in your memory of things that you should know.
That I literally missed. I took photos with Kermit and Piggy. I knew that then.
We'll go with Kermit or Piggy. Okay. Were you ever offered Eponine in any production of Les Mis?
I was not. But I know. I can't imagine. I may have been, but
you can't remember.
If the only reason I wouldn't have done it is because I was busy. Is because I couldn't, because I would have loved to have played that.
Are you into true crime at all?
No.
Okay.
I'm a little bit of a scaredy cat. Reading the newspaper is enough for me.
It's terrifying. And if you could go back in time and see any Broadway show, any decade, any performance, what would it be?
I'd probably just see Hamilton again.
Great. Well, that's available to you. You can watch it right now on Disney Plus. who makes you starstruck?
Dolly Parton and Brandy Carlile.
Have you ever seen a ghost?
I have felt a ghost, but I have not seen a ghost that I know of that it was Great. A ghost at the time.
Your favorite quarantine TV binge?
Unorthodox.
Oh my God. So good. What movie can you watch over and over again?
Sound of Music.
You love Sound of Music. All right. Last question. What advice do you have for young performers?
Do it for yourself. Sing for yourself. Feel what that character would feel and don't just be in your body. Don't even think about doing it for anybody else.
Allison Smith, I love everything about it. You are a delight. This is such a dream for me to get to chat with you. And I can't tell you how much I appreciate you coming on the podcast. Tell the people where they can follow you and find out what you're doing and what's next and your dates that you're going to be starring in Dear Evan Hansen, which we are sending out to the universe.
Well, you can find me on Instagram at Allison Smithagram. And I guess that is
That's the way.
That is the way. I've been putting a lot of old stuff up there, some vintage photos.
All the vintage. And we'll post some vintage photos on the Little Me podcast Instagram as well, because you are a magical theater child who grew up to be such an incredibly talented adult doing the thing that you were born to do. And there truly is nothing better than that. So thank you so much for joining me today. I hope that you had fun, Allison.
Thank you for creating the podcast. Great. For the specific niche of who I am.
This niche. And everybody at home, you can follow us at Little Me Podcast on the old Instagram and follow me, Mark Tuminelli, at Mark Tuminelli on Instagram. And make sure you subscribe to Little Me, rate and review, all that fun stuff. Allison, I can't wait to see you on Broadway or run into you in New York. I'm always going to be your biggest fan. Thank you again.
Mark, I love you. You're the best.
Bye.
Bye.
Thank you, listeners. This podcast is produced by Alan Seals, Dori Berenstein, and the Broadway Podcast Network, and edited by Derek Gunther. For more information on the Little Me podcast, go to bpn.fm/littleme. And follow me on Instagram at Mark Tuminelli or on Twitter at ThatTuminelli. And for more information on workshops, classes, and everything Broadway Workshop, go to BroadwayWorkshop.com. Thank you for listening.
Have you ever wondered how your favorite performer actually feels? Well, here's your chance. Welcome to The Quiet Part Out Loud with me, Bobby Steggert, Broadway actor, and now a therapist to a whole host of Broadway creatives. Part interview, part therapy, this is not your typical podcast. We'll go right to the heart of things with some of your favorite artists, what they still struggle with, what lessons they've learned, what they haven't figured out yet. There's enormous power in saying the quiet part out loud. Are you listening?
Hey, it's Leslie Odom Jr. here on the Broadway Podcast Network to tell you about the RISE Theater Directory, a program of Maestro Music. RISE is a national online resource designed to connect and empower backstage and administrative and creative theater professionals from underrepresented backgrounds. If you work or aspire to work in the theater community, this can help you find your next project. And if you hire theater professionals, search the RISE Theater Directory to find your next team. Create your profile now and get more information by visiting risetheater.org. That's theater with an RISETHEATRE.org, because only together we rise.